do I know him at? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It was bugging me. Good with faces, bad with names, and or where I know you.
Well, I think that's all. Let me catch you up just a little bit on me. My name is Daniel. I've always usually been the youngest person at the table. It is a blessing sometimes, and sometimes it's an obstacle, but I'm used to that. I feel like I relate that way to guys, especially as they're just getting going, and especially even to this subject. I served 2 years as a middle school pastor in Danville, Virginia, while I was at Liberty. I picked up my undergrad and my master's there. Spent 5 years in Westerville. You know where Westerville is, right outside of Columbus?
Well, it's on the east side.
You know where Sunbury is?
Yeah, I live there.
No way! Yeah. Like Big Walnut represent?
My brother lives right at
Adam
Creek.
Whoa, wow. Yeah. So I was there for 5 years. This is an exciting time. We're bonding already. Worked as a youth pastor there. And here's what basically happened for me, just so you know a little piece of my story. Really had a heart and a desire to train and equip guys. But although, you know, I'd been at that point in full-time ministry for about 7 years or so, that's not a really long time. And on top of that, I'm still young. I'm in my, like, mid-20s, and I'm thinking, you know, nobody's really going to listen to anybody in their mid-20s, and I don't really have anything to say. And so it was really about, for me, trying to put myself in a position to begin to expand my opportunities and put myself in a place that one day I would be able to fulfill what I felt like was a real calling in my life in youth ministry, to train and equip other youth pastors. And at that time, I was at my church. It was a nice, comfortable place, and I enjoyed it. And like many things that are comfortable, I was just content to stay there. And the Lord is merciful and graceful and helps you when you get stuck. And he helped me by letting me be diagnosed with T-cell lymphoma, a type of cancer that's a 5-year, 50-50 survival rate. And as going through that, it was a teaching time for me, as I was able to realize that life is like a vapor. And here and it's gone, and I have something that the Lord has burdened me with and laid on my heart, and I should pursue it, regardless if that seems kind of crazy and illogical or not. And so I began to look at seminaries and institutions that train and equip youth pastors, and I looked at places all over the nation, and I contacted Southern First because of their strategic partnership with local churches. You're talking about schools. One of the things that makes Southern different than most of the other places in the nation, it sounds crazy, but they strategically partner with local churches every semester. So every one of our students has to serve at one of our partnering site churches that is implementing and parallels a philosophy that they're teaching in class. They're held accountable to certain restrictions and certain guidelines and certain emphasis, and basically they become a laboratory. So it's not just a 6-hour internship that happens in the summer. There is a partnership of those two things, and that attracted me here. And so I've been here for 6.5 years. During that time, I continue every semester to teach as an adjunct, take advantage of opportunities like this, and I'm also an executive pastor of youth and family ministry at a church in Frankfort, Kentucky, which is about 45 minutes from here. And so that's me, but you didn't really come here to hear about me, so let's get started. Just the quick intro, some things that I'd like you to understand before we set this up. There are usually about 3 types of people that take this class or take this session and pick it. One is the guy who is just kind of green and has ideas and wants to get practical information of how to implement it. The second is the person who's about to be fired or really feels pressure because they are trying to do things and it's not working. And there's frustration for them on the administrative side of things, and they're just searching for any kind of help they can get. And the third is there are people who are just geared toward it. They're leaders, they're administrative, they like that, and they just soak it up like a sponge, and they're attracted to it. And that's a wide range. And so that's why I think this is a unique opportunity for you, because you're going to have the ability to kind of personalize this and discuss it as we go through. I did my dissertation not too long ago to assess the programmatic values of youth ministry. What that means is For those of you who are knowledgeable of the literature base around youth ministry right now, you realize in the last decade, there has been just a mammoth amount of information and data that has came out to evaluate and critique youth ministry. And it's been great data. It's been data on baptism rates. It's been data on retention. It's been data on the biblical literacy, if you will, of the 30-year-old that came through the youth group back in the day. And so all these things, though, had one thing in common. They measured some type of quantifiable result of youth ministry. So in other words, they measured the number of kids that were saved through the youth ministry. They measured a dropout rate in college. In other words, they're measuring, big fancy word, but they're measuring quantifiable efficiency. So a result on the back end that is produced from what they correlate to youth ministry. And a lot of times those correlations are very weak, but they're there. And we recognize and we can identify with a lot of what's coming out of that research. And it's great research and has many, many advantages to us, the youth pastor. The problem with that research is this, though. It's been led by basically every, or identified by about every somewhat of a new trend or new method in the last 10 years as evidence that what is currently happening is broke, and what we really need to do is this. And so whether that's the emergent movement, which I can even, I can go through and document some of those things, and I can quote those guys where they'll say things like, everything must change. It's all got to change. And here's what it's going to change to. So you got something as far to that side as you got like the family integrated stuff now. And they're going to say, look, you know, these things are broken. And it may even be unbiblical. But for sure it's not working, and here's why. And so they're listing out these results. Again, there's a part of that that's fair. There is a larger part on the other side, though, in which we are doing something that is unbiblical. We are trying to measure a ministry based on the results it produces. And if we study our Bible and we understand that that is the goal of ministry, as well as how we'll be held accountable and stand before God, is for our obedience in it. We don't really control the results anyway. And so, yes, we want to be efficient. We want to succeed. We want results. That is part of wrapped up in our aim. We all want that. Like he said, we want to conquer the world. We want to see everyone come to Christ. But you don't make that happen by a program. And by the same token, your program may not necessarily keep that from happening. And so what it has done for us is it's allowed a large bubble of criticism to come up against youth ministry and to say things like it's in a state of crisis or it's failing or even it's unbiblical or just flat out it doesn't work. And what I want to talk to you about is somewhat connected to that thought, to that idea. And I want to say it to you in a few tones, in a few different ways. And again, I hope this discussion can become personalized to you because I want it to be something that encourages you. But youth ministry does work. It does. And youth ministry exists within a range of permissibility in Scripture. In other words, it may not say thou shalt do youth ministry, but it's not telling you you shouldn't. And it's not even just that. We are called to minister to young people and their families. It goes all the way back to the Shema, like we were talking about. This is part of who we are. This is our core. Well, we get that. We understand that. And then you are hired, somehow, some way, entitled, entrusted to be the leader. And what happens is somebody reaches into their pocket, a parent, a pastor, and they dig out their keys to the most valuable possession they have, their children. And they say, we entrust you to drive. And I think when we're younger, we don't really necessarily quickly identify what they've just entrusted us to do and the responsibility and the leadership that demands. It demands strategy. No longer do we just react, but people are following us. They've entrusted us to something. And so they hand you those keys, and now how you get there is somewhat up to you. No youth ministry programs really mirror each other exactly. They're all a little different, and they take on a different method to accomplish a lot of the same things, but all those things are up to you. And you guys that know that have been there for a while, you'll make a change or you'll do something, and inevitably somebody doesn't like that. And inevitably somebody loves it. And the extreme end, you may lose people from your church because of the pursuit of a vision that you've put out. And by the very same token, that very same vision may bring people in. But it's you who are responsible for navigating these waters, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about. And I think it's important for you to understand that within the larger scope of what's happening in youth ministry literature right now. So that's why I gave you that background. Practical thing number one that I want you to make sure that you understand is a distinction between mission and vision. A distinction between mission and vision. If there's any one thing you can walk away with from our session today, this one will help you as much as any. Mission, core value. It is the absolute directives of your ministry. Now, that would apply to any organization. And if you read a lot of leadership books, my PhD is actually in leadership. If you read a lot of leadership books, you're going to read tons about mission. Thought it was awesome if you listened to Wayne Rice last night say, you know, we didn't even know what a mission statement was. I don't know if you caught that, but that's true. The mission statement didn't really come out until the management objective stuff late in the 60s, 70s, and it definitely hadn't paralleled over into youth ministry at that time. And so he's documenting something that's a really neat thing when you understand the history of it. Mission. It is the organization's purpose. It is that defining directive of why they exist. Now, for us as an organization in the church, our mission is already defined for us. What defines our mission? What gives you your absolute biblical directives?
Great Commission.
That's right. Great Commission. The whole Bible, right? So we got this book that is an absolute source of truth. Now watch this. It gives us our directives. We don't argue with those. We don't get around to get to say, you know what? We got Great Commission stuff. You know, evangelism. We'll think about it. Let's put that in our parking lot over here. We may come back to that one later. No, we don't get a choice to do that because we understand that the Bible is our source of truth. So watch this. Scripture defines for us the mission. Evangelism, mission. Discipleship, mission. Fellowship, mission. These are kinds of things. And by the way, I went through and we identify a lot of those missions in terms that have been communicated to us through literature. So like I just named three, I gave you purpose-driven terms. Those just came to mind. I didn't mean to, but I did. So I'm even terming my mission in something that's cultural, but the reality is it's a biblical mandate. I have to do these things. So again, watch this. Evangelism, mission. Discipleship, mission. Fellowship, mission. Sunday school, mission. It could be, right? That's good. I like that. What about your youth all-nighter?
Maybe. Those are the devil.
Amen. Amen. I'm with you. So watch this. So you got these events, right? What is the biggest, most sacred cow event at your church? Oh, we got some, I'm sure.
Camp.
Camp. Is it mission?
It's camp.
The church I'm at right now is founded in 1818. I think that year they started a D-Now weekend. It is a big deal. And no, I've never been in a church where they're like grandparents were at an event. And they'll come up and talk to you about what they did at their D-Now weekend. It's incredible. Yeah.
We have a kids.
Mission is an absolute biblical directive. And if you walk away with anything, if you want to move from ideas to execution, here's step one. Do not let anything that is not mission be categorized as mission. That is up to you to make sure that you you communicate, you reinforce, and you also, too, adhere to that. That means Sunday school. That means My D Now, your camp. Even these great things are something else because they're not a biblical mandate. Now, they are the purpose in which we, they are the method in which we are trying to fulfill that purpose, right? So we don't just, you know, go to camp because we love camp. And we don't just, you know, have a D Now because, you know, we like D Now. And we don't just have Sunday school because, woohoo, we love Sunday school. We do these things because we want a disciple. And this is the method that we have. This is a vision. This is the distinction. The vision is the application plan of the mission. It determines for us why and how we're going to fulfill the mission. Now, in our churches, you know this. You guys already get this. What happens is when they are not clearly separated, tradition comes in. Practice comes in. And that which is vision slowly finds itself in the mission category. And a structure and a program is constantly moved up and up and closer and closer. And before you know it, you know, Sunday school was right there, you know, in, you know, Psalms 151. It's there. And so for us, that becomes a difficult dynamic to navigate because you have some of that. And chances are that distinction isn't just made within your people. And instead of expecting them to and expecting that everyone's going to have that same level of spiritual maturity to so easily diagnose that, you are, again, the one responsible for leading that. And so this program, this ministry, this youth ministry that you lead, that you oversee, watch this. You are not only responsible for, you know, the organization of the events and making sure the kid's there and making sure that Sunday school really does disciple and all this kind of stuff. You're really, on a larger and a more foundational point, responsible for communicating the purpose and its alignment to your mission. And sometimes there's going to be things, and man, they are great events, and you're going to need to say, but this is still just a vision. We do this to accomplish this aspect of our mission. Now, that does a certain number of things for you, and all these things help. One, it helps you develop a stated mission statement. It may not necessarily be painted on your wall. It may not be summarized in like 5 words. But the reality is it allows you to state, communicate, present your mission, because that mission should drive everything that you do. You with me? Second, it gives you a way to evaluate what you're doing. It gives you a way to evaluate what you're doing. So by that, now you're sitting here and you've got these things into practice. And I say, you know what? I don't like Sunday school. Sunday school is a drag. Nobody wants to come to Sunday school. We want to go to small groups, and we want to go at people's house where they have Diet Dr. Pepper and snacks. And they don't let us have that in Sunday school. Praise the Lord, I'm a fan of small groups. That's what we want to do. And so now you're faced with a dilemma. Let's even say it's an awesome dilemma, and it's right down the middle. Half your church wants small groups. The other half wants Sunday school. Now, you get to say, well, which, here's what the statement, which best accomplishes our mission? And wouldn't it be nice if you could just ask that question and everyone would just agree? And that becomes the problem. And that's where we stumble early on in moving from ideas to execution. Now, first off, all the stuff that I just talked us through, I don't know that we really articulate that very well and teach that very well to our youth leaders and speak that way to our other pastors on staff and really communicate that through the church. I think you just do that naturally in your head and then you just go. But what you've done is you've left behind your leadership. They don't understand why you're trying to make these decisions. That becomes a major problem. And if, by the way, if you're grinding and you're doing all these things right and you're going, man, my church is about to, they're about to fire me. My pastor says I'm not cutting it. I don't have youth leaders on board. There's a great chance you're messing up in that area. You haven't identified them all the way back to the mission. They just see you doing stuff. And even though you know there's a purpose behind the stuff that you do, you haven't helped reinforce that with them. But let's assume at this point you have, you're there, that mission, that vision is being practiced, it's moving forward, you've got these things, and man, they're still 50-50. I don't know what change you're wanting to make. Maybe it's something like you're describing, but the reality is it's going to be tough. There are going to be people that disagree. And you are going to have to go back again to your mission. I want to be honest with you. I use Sunday school as an example. I don't really like our Sunday school program. I do think in our culture and a lot of the people in our Sunday school, we would be a lot more effective at discipleship and fellowship in our church if we did it a different way. Do you know what we're doing next week? Sunday school. Now watch. I'm not afraid to change Sunday school because I might make somebody just upset. But as part of my mission and a part of understanding fellowship is to understand the biblical directive the church has to promote and facilitate unity. Unity, it's a biblical directive. Just like discipleship. And Sunday school in and of itself isn't ineffective. But it creates for me something that slows me down and says that my vision isn't the mission. And even if my vision is more efficient, I can't overlook this other biblical mandate that I have, this other mission that helps me make those decisions. And so now I've even got more to add to the play. And now my leadership team, when I sit around with you guys and we're trying to discern what to do with Sunday school or what to do with small groups, and you guys over here saying small groups, small groups, small groups. We got to do some small groups. That's where it's at. We'll change lives. And you guys are going, no. The lives of my kids, me, been changed through Sunday school. I know it works. And I got the two of you guys on separate sides. If I'm just talking about strategies, I'm never going to get you guys together. Just never, it's never going to happen. Frankly, I don't have any authority to make you come together. And the only thing that I can even make an argument for is I can try to make a long, long descriptive argument toward efficiency. And I can say, no, look, I think this is a little bit more efficient, or I think this is a little bit more efficient. And what's lost is the discipleship of our leaders to teach them and get them back to mission. I'm about to open this up for some questions within specific where you're at before we move forward. So when we talk about the distinction between mission and vision, when we talk about going from ideas to execution, I know you're not wanting to sit and go all the way back. But if you don't, you really authoritatively have very little leg to stand on when it comes to facilitating ownership and equipping the saints for the work of ministry, to put it in a biblical term, but to really rally them. And by the way, in that same Ephesians 4, that same verse that we're really talking about when we're talking about vision and equipping, is not without the emphasis of the unity of the body and the benefit for the whole, not your program. Not your emphasis and not your preference and not even what you deem to be most efficient until we all reach mature manhood. So this is going to be ongoing. So you as part of this, if you really want to have success and you want to be able to bring new ideas into a youth ministry, if you really want your youth ministry to really begin to strive to be efficient in these things, you're never going to win your churches over on just ideas. You're first going to invest in the long-term discipleship of making sure they understand what the mission of the church and the youth ministry is. And the rest are just strategies. The rest is just our pursuit. And we're game for any of them, if need be. But if you don't make that distinction, everybody gets to think their idea is the mission. And that is a scary thing. And people will stand and stand firm and fight to the bitter end And they may not make a big scene, which doesn't normally happen in youth ministry, but it's the difference between their buy-in and their passion to support you and be on board versus their just presence. And for those of you who've been in ministry for a while, you know the difference between having a youth leader who has buy-in, who has passion, who wants to be there because they're compelled to be. Not just because they have to be. They're compelled to be. They get the bigger task. It's the kid who's sitting in the media room who's hitting next, you know, down on the keynote. This is not someone's, you know, spiritual gift. If you remember the old Simpsons, this is the chicken that's hitting the down button. This is what's happening. The difference is when you get a kid in there who gets how that is connected to the gospel, and that's his best opportunity that day, and he is passionate and excited about it, it shows more than just you getting to the next slide. And if that's going to happen, you've got to get these things back first out of the practices, back to mission. So before we go forward and we start talking about the specifics of getting those ideas and the execution strategy and all that stuff, we have to start there. Questions, comments, experiences, thoughts? Now, guys, come on.
In your experiences, how do you end up getting good buy-in through church government offices, pastors on board to when you begin to change tradition and the distinctions that end up becoming the mission? How do you go in your challenge?
I have to first remind I know this isn't as specific as you want to be to begin with, but it's where I mess up. And where, in just teaching, you know, 6 years of being here and just teaching, where I see our guys mess up. We have this expectation, and especially if you come from a seminary, so students, listen to me on this one. We have this expectation because we're surrounded by guys who are like us that we're going to go to a church and we're going to lock arms with other mature believers because they've been a Christian and they've been going to church long and they're going to be just like me. They're going to know the mission and they're going to be willing to do any vision to get us there because they have buy-in to all that. And so they're going to lock arms, they're ready to go and, you know, woohoo! And then we get to our church and you know what? Our parents, they're not that spiritually mature. Our senior pastor doesn't really seem to be too, you know, into winning lost people in our community. They got real issues. I think some of my church is racist. I think some of my church is, you know, I don't even think they read the Bible. I think we got deacons and I don't even think they read their Bible. And so you begin to be bombarded with this reality that, you know what, the church isn't as mature as I thought it was. They don't see mission. They don't make distinction in vision. It's all just kind of vision to them. It's all just kind of what they want to do and their traditions and their preferences. And so here's I think, the tendency. I'll quit. Go somewhere else. I'll find somebody who buys in to what we're trying to do. And so we hop. I think a lot of guys do that. We don't do it as much as we used to, but a lot of guys do that. Although I don't hop, I'll get frustrated. Because I want and expect them to be at a level of maturity that they're not. And so what I'll do when I make my mistakes is I'll look at them and I'll say, look, I know you're only like 5 years old. I get that you're only 5 years old. But we're about doing calculus here. And what I need you to do is figure out how to do calculus. And if you can get that done by the end of the week and get back, that would be awesome. But we're going to do calculus. And we're not settling for anything less because that's what we've been called and commissioned to do. And I look back to my parents or I look back to those youth leaders or even the church structure and I say, we're going to do calculus. Well, the reality is I don't know if you guys are really awesome at math. I'm not. It would take me a while to mature in my math to the point of successfully doing anything with calculus. And I have a little girl. I don't expect her to do calculus anywhere in the next 10 years of her life. Don't think that's going to happen. It's not even my expectation. However, I do expect for her in her math classes and in her studies and all those things to begin to make progress. But you know who's ultimately responsible for that progress in that setting? I am. I've been called to pastor them just as much as the unknown person. I've been called to equip them just as much. And so I think first I have to slow down and I have to realize they're not my enemy. They are not my stumbling block. They are my mission. And I'm just going to be honest. I'm type A. I'm an only child. I'm incredibly driven. And I don't want to wait. I want to do calculus now. And I don't want to take my time and put in here because I'm so focused over here. And I will make that mistake, maybe not so much in practice anymore, but I will make it in my heart a lot. And even though I'll teach about it, I'll forget it. And so I'll have this person in my office, or I'll have this person, and you know, frankly, it just becomes easier to push them to the side and try to find somebody else. And what happens when we do that, oh, you guys are in this, you're going to relate to this one. You'll do like I will. You'll not find anyone any more mature. You'll just find the person who, in their strategy or in their method or in their vision, just happens to align more with you. So they don't really grasp it anymore. They just kind of naturally like what you do better. But in a almost in a worldly sense, where they buy into the efficiency of it. But you haven't really matured them, nor have you really gained a mature leader. And so what happens is their buy-in, watch this, their buy-in is then linked to what? It's back to your vision. It's back to the strategy. And so 5 years from now, when you need to change that, you know what? I'm not going to be so on board with that. And if you haven't progressed them back to the point of mission, you're never going to be able to make these transitions from these ideas to execution. And this is not just a problem for youth ministry. This is a leadership problem in every corporation and every organization across the world. But it is a skill and a competency that we are responsible for because it's you that they've handed the keys to. It's you. And so I think you start there. And then I think you start walking them through in mission terms. So, you know, I stopped talking about Sunday school programmatically. I've been talking to Sunday school for years at this point about discipleship, and I measure it based on discipleship. So it's not even for me. I mean, we have the attendance, but we don't even talk about our attendance. I talk to them about the fellowship that happens outside of their class. I talk to them about the community. I talk to them about a sense of vulnerability. I mean, are people just on the surface when they're in class, or can someone say in your class or get help for, you know, a struggle, you know, in their marriage or in their home? And, you know, if their wife's cheating on them, do you have some kind of support network where that husband has somebody to come talk to in your class? If they're going through a crisis with aging parents who have illness and are just in real need, is there a support network in your class? And so I start bringing it back to the purpose. And by doing and identifying and reminding and reinforcing the mission and the purpose as opposed to the program, then it facilitates a long-term understanding of, well, my, you know, 9 o'clock hour in which I show up and teach my classes is really just a piece of what's expected here, of what's going on here, of what's at value here. And so I'm not getting them to calculus in a day, but I strategically and individually identify them so that I can begin to train and equip them to a point of maturity. And that is so scriptural. That is Hebrews 5. You remember in Hebrews 5, the author of Hebrews looks back. I'm rambling a little bit. We got to move forward. But Hebrews 5, he looks back and he says, about this much we have much to say. That's where he begins. About this, he's been talking about the order of Melchizedek. He goes, about this we have much to say. But you've become dull of hearing. He says, you still need somebody to teach you the basic oracles of the faith. In other words, the foundation, the gospel. You still need people teaching you this stuff. You should be teachers by now. But this is what you need. You need milk, not solid food. For solid food is for the mature, those who have had their powers of discernment trained by constant practice. Practice? We're going to talk about practice? Yeah, practice. Point is, it wasn't like the author of Hebrews thought in one paragraph. He could take them from this immature state to this mature state. They still need training. They still need practice. They still need somebody to take their keys and facilitate them and put them in an environment where they could make progress. And I think too often with me is what I do is I have this idea of my vision, which is really an arrival point, which is not even biblical, but an arrival point. I'm being vulnerable, but honest. I want us to arrive here. And if we're here, man, we're conquering the world. That I forsake my calling to be obedient to facilitate and equip and nurture and mature this group of people that God has given me. And so instead of being focused on algebra, because that's where my people are at, I'm still over here talking and programming for calculus. And so when I walk into a room full of students and they all look at me with these blank stares on their face, and they're all kind of bored and they're all kind of sleeping, and they're there because they understand maybe the value of education, and they're kind of there. But there's no buy-in. There's no excitement. They don't even get it. That is not their mistake. That is mine. I am not leading them to that point. And I'm putting those programs and those practices in front of them. It's a long-winded answer. But I think it's a long-term solution at that point. Especially when you're talking like camp. That's right.
Mission values. And it's just something to think about before you end up being into a situation for those guys who are in school now as you're going into your young career. You know, not saying you can't go in and redeem a situation, but be cautious.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, kind of a follow up question, what you're talking about. It's something that being the young youth guy coming in, all right, we're going to change everything. But fortunately, God's given me enough wisdom to not necessarily do that. But at this point, I've got a lot of things that God's put on my heart as far as what we need to do to be more effective in discipleship and with mentoring and different things like that. Mm-hmm. I guess the question I have is, you know, keeping the unity, but not letting the unity necessarily cripple or just completely stall what God's put on my heart. Like, how do you keep it moving forward, but not, you know, how do you see that progress going forward, I guess, instead of being just halted because you're like, all right, well, I don't want to cause any disunity. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think you know, to take the line from Bill Murray, I think you're going to take some baby steps. Mm-hmm. Look, I think your rock the world changes are mission changes. So in other words, if you look in your program and in your youth ministry and you have no strategic effort to disciple young people, make a change. Make the change. Disrupt unity. Make the change. If evangelism is not present in your youth ministry, make the change. You know, if like we're talking in a lot of these reinvent structures and the different things, and we're talking about the emphasis of the family. And, you know, I was taught different than that way back into my education and having the blessing to sit with guys like Dave Adams way back in the day. But there are guys who really, you know, just kind of figured that out. Steve Wright, who wrote the book Rethink, if you've ever read that book, it's a great book. But it kind of documents this pattern in him. In 20 years in the youth ministry, he's been running crazy with all these programs, and he's like scratches his head and goes, I don't have any parents, but I've really done this wrong. Make the change. I promise that those kinds of changes are going to cause some disunity. They're going to cause some friction. But those are mandates. So with those things, I would tell you, you do it. And you explain why you do it. And you stand behind doing it. And frankly, if it's a biblical mandate, and I'm not, listen, don't confuse your vision with that mission, but if it's a biblical mandate and your church won't go there, do you want to be there? And are they even a biblical church? I'm not talking they do a poor job at it. I'm talking they have left it. It's not part of their mission. With the other stuff, the more specific stuff, I think you take your time. That's the biggest thing, I think, that for me, I'm starting my 14th year in local church ministry. And only in the last three have I just realized the value of just tenure and consistency. And grasp, use that algebra to calculus or that you know, addition to calculus model. If you're there and you're setting these goals, there's nothing wrong with having a six-year goal to get there. And your objectives, you need to have, and we're going to talk about a lot of this stuff in just a second, so I'm just trying not to get there. But you're going to have some clear objectives, and they need to be winnable. You need to know those people. They need to be individually plugged into that, equipped, put in places where they win. You're not delegating dirty. By that I mean I'm not just giving him tasks. You don't just hit down. But instead I'm pursuing a biblical model, a healthy model of delegation, which would be equipping that saint within his gift set, within his passion, putting him in places where he can win, and letting them see the fruits that connect back to that mission. And so, again, those kind of things. Here's some specifics we'll go through. So, points of application, here they are. I'm going to run through them. You stop. We'll talk about how they work where you're at. Number one, establish and reinforce the distinction between mission and vision. We talked about that for the first 30 minutes. That's just the big deal. You want to get in a place where you can repetitively go from idea to execution. This has to be in place. You may get lucky enough to do it four times out of five without it. But one out of every five is just going to really bite you, hurt your ministry, hurt your unity, and hurt your purpose. And not to mention the fact that I don't know that you'll really mature your guys without helping them make that distinction. So establish it. Make sure it's communicated. It needs to be reinforced within every one of your programs. So that means when you talk about your programs, you're not just talking about the events. You're talking about why you're doing it. You're going all the way back to that stage. You're not leaving your leadership or your church out of that. So it doesn't matter that it's the 31st year we're doing camp. Here's why we're doing camp this year. Here's what I would like for you to pray for. Here's what we aim to accomplish. And this is why we thought this camp was the best way for us to do that. And year one of saying that, it may sound like, look, we really feel like this is a solid camp that will allow us to really expose a lot of different new kids to the gospel, as well as give some really solid discipleship time into our core kids. There may be other camps out there that will frankly do a better job for us and more efficient, but with our history and some of the things that we have connected, we just feel like this is the best one for this year. Don't change it, but explain the rationale and begin to lay the foundation for those things so they'll begin to think about it that way. And so reinforce it. Every event, every year, even if it's the 10 years in. What's that say about your weekly programs? Wednesday night, your small groups, your small group leaders. Your small group leader every week reinforces why they're meeting there. It's never just taken for granted. So you're training your leaders and your church to recognize the purpose behind what you're doing. So, and the distinction between it in terms of a programmatic action versus the mission it's trying to communicate. For you, you're going to begin to diagnose your ministry. You're going to do that in a few different ways. First, you're going to identify your mission statement. How many of you guys have a stated mission? It's stated. Ish. The reality is you have one whether you publish it or not. You know what I'm saying? You communicate a mission whether you mean to or you don't. Now, your stated mission doesn't necessarily reflect your actual mission. You can state one thing and do another. And so, the purpose that drives you, you may say... one thing, and it may actually look like something else. But identify what your stated mission is. So for you, take some time. Begin to ask around with your youth leaders. Ask them, why do you think we do small groups? Why do you think our mission at our youth ministry is? When you hear me talk about it, what are you here? Second, ask them or identify your stated vision. There's a difference. You emphasize certain things. My last church was very outreach-driven. We did all kinds of big events, and I mean, it was a mega church, and so I just did all kinds of weird stuff that, frankly, I haven't done in years. And don't, like, I've got, I don't know, I have this memory of, we used to do these huge concerts at our church and different things like that, And I've never been like a concert person, but I'd have to introduce them and I'd run out and they'd be out and there'd be thousands of people. And you know, and sometimes there were bands I'd never even heard of that were set up by somebody else. And I remember there was one, this one band that was like this Christian version of like a boy band. And then they had this other like girl band. And I looked out, I run on stage, and they're like 2,000 like 13-year-old girls. And I'm like, y'all ready? And they just scream, and it was deafening. And I was like, wow, that is a lot of 13-year-old girls, and I am deaf. And I'm like, you want a shirt? And they're like, ah, and they're screaming. I'll just be honest with you. We did a lot of those types of things, big event type of things at our church. Not just in our youth ministry, it was really the kind of the vision of our church. We had the resources, we had the money, we were in a location. There were, you know, we were in Columbus, it's like 13th, 14th largest city in the U.S. That worked. I'm now in Frankfurt. There are only 3,000 teenagers in our entire city. All right? We don't have facilities. If I had a concert, it's for like us. That's the, about the extent of the concert that's going to fit in that room. And so it's changed the vision and strategy of our church. So they're going to be different. So, for example, the way you pursue evangelism may be through a lot of all-nighters and some of this stuff and real events, and you may be much more relational. You may run evangelism strategically through your small groups. I'm not here to tell you one's necessarily right and one's wrong, or one's even better and one's, you know, lesser. What I'm actually saying to you is, it says and defines how you methodologically apply your mission. It defines your vision. And that is picked up on by people. They understand that. And frankly, if you can communicate that and narrow that, it explains again to further detail why you're doing what you're doing, and therefore paints a picture of how people can get involved. So identify your stated vision. Again, this is mental work. This is grinding it out. I know you don't have time, and it's hard to just get those quiet moments in your office to make calls and begin to interact, but these are important tasks. Number four, part of this, identify your programmatic values. In other words, your executed vision. So, different than what you just actually say, what do you do? What do you do? Programmatic values. What do you do? Critique every action. And be honest. You may only go to camp because they've went to camp for 20 years. And it's just something you got to do. And that may be the reason you're going. I don't know. But be honest. And critique every action throughout your entire week and your entire year. Take a full inventory. A full inventory of every resource. That's your physical resources. You do. You have facilities. You have rooms. There's a reason your room is set up the way it's set up. You have certain equipment. You have sound equipment. You have sports equipment. You have some of you guys connect and do different sports ministries. And you have all these different things that are going on. You have a praise band. You have all kinds of stuff that's happening. One ministry, and when I was in Danville, we had all this skate equipment and this basically a skate park. And it was awesome. I can't even stand up on a skateboard. But we did it, and we pulled in hundreds of kids through that skate park. I haven't built a skate park at any of my other places, but we did there because it fit there. It was a value for us within outreach. And so I began to understand why we did that. But you have resources, physical resources. You have money. Look at your budget. Seriously, go back through and look at how you spend the percentage of your budget. Now, some of you say, I don't have $30,000 like these big churches. I've only got this or whatever. Look at it in percentage terms. Ask. Well, you've already identified your mission. Ask. How much of my money do I spend toward discipleship? How much of my money do I spend toward evangelism? How much money do I spend toward these things? Is that healthy? Is it balanced? Is where I want it to be? Communicate these things. Make sure your youth leaders know and understand why you do what you do. Time. Time is a resource for you, especially for you. It's also a resource for your youth leaders. And then the last, people. People are a resource. We have a part-time lady who's the sweetest, dearest lady. She is our children's director at our church. And about a year and a half ago, they were kind of struggling, and I tried to get involved to help them through some transitions. And I showed up to a children's committee that no longer exists, but it was a children's committee of about 6 to 8 ladies that would meet, and they kind of try to run everything. Problem is, nobody really felt like they had authority, and so they all just sat around and talked, and they never made progress. But I asked them in my first meeting with them, what is your biggest problem? Anybody can guess what group of children's workers would say would be their biggest problem? We don't have enough help. All right, so I kind of thought about that, and I went through it. Came back the next week, and I said, look, I pointed out all these different numbers of how much help they had, and because I'd asked them to do some evaluation, do you still think people are your biggest weakness? Oh, yeah, we just need more help. We don't have enough people help, and they begin to kind of bash on our church for not helping. Now, here's what you need to understand. 1 out of every 5 adults in our church serve in our children's ministry every week. 1 out of every 5. It's a small community. We run about 600, give or take. And they're seeing around 120, 130 adults every week. In their Awana and their Sunday school and all the different programs that they have. And so I kind of sternly looked back at them and said, I want to be real honest with you. People is not your problem. You have more people helping in your ministry than any other ministry of our church. Your program is your problem. I said, if you can't run Awana without overtaxing 130 people, stop doing Awana and do something else. And they gasped. That's like our best program. And they're right, it is. I was making my point, though. It was like this, how could you suggest that? But the reality is that the people's part of the resource. And if you're taxing through one area of your program, all of your people, that's on you. You've only got what you got. I mean, yes, you're going to recruit, and yes, you're going to pull in, but at some point, that's where you're at. That's today. That's doing the addition today. And so understand that you got to take an inventory of your people, their gift set, their strengths, their weaknesses, and put them in places where you're at. Some of you have some of the most spiritually mature youth leaders that get it at every level. They're great teachers, and they're great with your kids. And you can use those guys in certain ways. Some of you have parents who and youth leaders who just love the Lord and love Jesus, but were saved like 2 years ago and are just there and they're excited. You're not going to want to use those people in the same way. And the strategy, the level to which you do that strategically, goes back again to your responsibility. You've been handed the keys as part of that job. And so take a full inventory of every resource you have. And don't just make these changes without looking through and doing that whole inventory list. 5th, identify the balance between objectives and dreams. Objectives and dreams. In other words, where you are and where you want to go. There is a reality of where you are. You got traditions, you got programs, you've got some strengths and weaknesses. You're going to have some dynamic within your maybe even your pastoral staff, but you're going to have some hurdles. And at the same time, you got dreams. You got passion. And by the way, that's healthy. That's exciting. And so, but you got to find a healthy balance of that. Otherwise, you just start being the guy who's running around screaming calculus in the toddler room, and all the little kids are just looking at you and don't get it. And so you're the one who's responsible to make sure that that's balanced. And those objectives are strategic and laid out. And so it's not just something that you're looking at with a 10-year goal, but you have, a series of 1-year goals that are going to get you there. And of those 1-year goals, you've got monthly goals. And all those things are laid out and strategically thought through within what you have in front of you. Next, define your vision. You're going to be able to identify your vision. You do all this stuff. maybe you walk away and you really make some changes to the things that you're wanting to implement as a result of just thinking through this stuff. That's fine. But don't try to define your vision until you do these kinds of things. Especially our younger guys and our guys who struggle administratively, this is where they fail. They go to a conference, they hear an idea, they talk to a friend or they see another church, or even they just dream up something that's just going to be awesome. And they're just ready to go. But they haven't diagnosed their ministry. They haven't assessed what they have, what they're looking at, the people that are around them. And none of that's come into play with this. And so define your vision, long term and short term. Long term and short term. And if you do that, what happens is then you can begin to make that distinction and help your youth leaders out. You can say, look, we're going to do this camp for the next 4 years. We're there, we're committed, it works. But if we don't see some progress in these areas and what we're getting out of that toward this mission, toward this core value, well, we're going to start looking for other places that would better fit that. But lay it out. I mean, nobody's going to get real panicked over something 4 years down the road. But just begin to have a strategy, short-term and long-term. And then initiate the implementation. So before you actually have tried to change any of this, before you, you know, had your last Sunday school class and had the beginning of your first small group, or you've decided that you're not going to do this retreat and you're going to do this one, or that you're going to launch a completely new look to your Wednesday night service, you have done a lot of homework if you do these things that we've talked about. But the difference, if you do it, is the buy-in, the support, the fact that you've trained up people with you. They get it. Now you actually sit around a room with people who, at least in this one moment, in this one understanding of this one program, have been exposed to the calculus of it. They get it at the same level you do. You really have facilitated leadership, as opposed to, watch this, just changing a program. And so that's the difference. Questions, comments?